IDNs are going to get squeezed from both ends. They're going to get squeezed on the primary care side and people starting to move around and do things. And they're going to have to really reduce their cost structure, or they're going to have to figure out how to get into the payer game and to start taking on risk and manage care lives like Intermountain has done, or they're going to be acquired, or they're just going to run out of money and really have to scale back. And we're seeing all of this happen right now.
From InterSystems, it's the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. To learn more about this and other episodes, please visit podcast.healthydata.com.
We are here today with Bill Russell, founder of This Week Health Podcast, founder of Health Lyrics, and former CIO of St. Joseph Health. Bill, thanks so much for joining us today.
Jordan, thank you. It's fun to be on the other side of the microphone.
So for our listeners who don't know, Bill has been in the provider space for a while, and then for the last few years has been hosting his own podcast as a journalist. So he's had exposure to a broad swath of different key players in the healthcare, health IT space across the United States over the past few years. So what I'd like to cover today is generally what he's been seeing and hearing over the past few years, maybe how it's changed since he was in the provider space himself. He's been elbow deep in health IT for a long time, so a synopsis of change over time might be interesting. To kick us off, one change that we've seen over the last decade or so has been a shift from fee-for-service to more risk-based sharing. Now, fee-for-service and various permutations continues to dominate American healthcare despite an abundance of successful integrated care models like Kaiser Permanente, Intermountain, UPMC, that are all less encumbered by pricing transparency, upcoding, and rate setting. So Bill, I'd like to ask, what's holding America back from moving more quickly towards the payvider model?
You know what's interesting? It's made no progress. So on that, I'm going to disagree a little bit because it was the same outside of Intermountain's made some significant gains, but UPMC was doing this a long time ago. Kaiser was doing this a long time ago. Kaiser was our largest competitor in Southern California, and their model has been pretty consistent. They haven't been able to scale it, but they've been pretty consistent for a long time. Sharp Healthcare is another one that does a good job with risk-based contracts. We at St. Joe's, and to get this to data pretty quickly, we entered into risk-based contracts for, I think, 500,000 lives while I was CIO at St. Joe's. And it was really that experience for me that sort of set the foundation for how I feel about data in healthcare. And it was, I'm sitting there, it was Blue Shield at the time and our clinically integrated network. And if you know anything about California, we don't employ the physician groups. And so they're all splitters. Splitters meaning they practice at our hospital, they practice at other hospitals. Their EHRs are independent and we have to figure out how to share. And so we had a clinically integrated network, and integrated would be a misnomer, but they were independent practices on independent EHRs. And we were doing this deal to keep people healthy. And they came to me as the CIO and said, all right, here's what we need. We need a common messaging framework that we can message across this entire clinically integrated network, and no less than 50 EHRs, by the way, a messaging platform. We need to be able to share the data and the records across all 50 of these EHRs. And oh, by the way, we need to create a set of metrics across all these disparate physicians and practices and specialties that they're measured on health. Because that's in fee-for-service, we don't really measure health. We measure, not to be too pessimistic, but we measure money.
Vision of healthcare, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, it's for lack of a better term, we measure outcomes for sure, but we don't measure health per se. Are we keeping people healthy? Are we keeping them out? And when you enter into those risk-based contracts, that's what you're measured on. But in order to do that, you have to go beyond the 20% of data that impacts health, right? So the healthcare data, the medical record, only impacts 20% of health. We know this. Social determinants of health impact the other 80% of health. And unless you're bringing all that data together. And so my experience, let's see, what was that? 8 years ago was setting up that clinically integrated network, and it was virtually impossible. Now, we did it on the HealthShare platform as an aside, but it was virtually impossible. It was so difficult to do. And I'm not sure it's any less difficult today.
So, I mean, a few points on that. One, there are European countries that do have EHRs that account for social determinants of health. That's been covered on a previous episode of Healthy Data Podcast. But on the other hand, I do want to go back to, we listed at least four different Sharp, KP, Intermountain, and UPMC integrated networks that are in the United States that have been functioning. So the question is, I guess, how have they been successful and why hasn't it spread, even if they're only able to control 20% of what we refer to as total well-being and health?
It's important to note that they struggle to spread, right? So Kaiser, one of the things that's said about Kaiser is it doesn't scale. They've been unable to take it into new markets. And there's good examples of that. I mean, they tried to go into the Texas market and were completely shut out. They're still trying to go into the Arizona market and they've been unable to do it. They're wildly successful in California, but part of that could be the contracts that they have. And then some other markets, I think DC, they do pretty well and others. So they've been unable to scale that model across the country for whatever reason. UPMC is regional and they've been able to do it regionally. Intermountain has been able to do it regionally as well. Same with Sharp. Nobody's been able to really break out and do it on a national level. And part of the reason for that is the incentives, right? So the incentives don't line up. You have a multi-billion dollar industry, trillion, but you have multi-billion dollar health systems that essentially rely on fee for service. And so it's been described to me this way, and everyone's heard this analogy. They have one foot in this boat, and then the other boat is, okay, we know that we need to transition. We need to go to more of a value-based care model. But if we do that, we're going to get paid to keep people healthy, which essentially takes money away from this boat. And so we have to transition from this boat to this boat. We have a foot in each boat, and those boats are slowly drifting apart. And this could explain somewhat of what's going on in the industry from a financial standpoint right now is, people are, it's not that there's been a mass exodus from healthcare. It's been that slowly but surely these other movements outside of healthcare have been chipping away at this fee-for-service model because we all know it's broken, including the people who work in it. They don't like it. We wonder why there's burnout and that kind of stuff. One of the reasons there's burnout is people operate in this fee-for-service model and they sit there and go, I don't like this. I don't like this for my family. I don't like this for my community. It drives up costs. It's highly redundant. The coding and all that stuff is way too complex for what we're trying to do. And at the end of the day, it caused more bankruptcies from healthcare costs than anything else. So we know that model's broken, but we're not able to make the transition because in order to do it, you have to what has been termed creative destruction of a business model. And that creative destruction of a business model doesn't really support the underlying investments we have made in the larger healthcare ecosystem. We've built huge campuses. We've bought really expensive equipment. And in order to keep paying the salaries we're paying, you have to keep this model going. So I'm not sure the change of healthcare is going to come from within healthcare. It's probably going to be more and more pressure from the outside.
And when you say pressure from the outside, just I want to contextualize American healthcare. And I think after World War II, I think around 1948, you had Britain go to the single payer National Health Service. Around 1994, you had Canada go to single payer. You've had in the latter part of the 20th century, multiple major Western nations transition from a more hodgepodge approach to kind of universal coverage and shifting away, I don't know as much towards value-based payments, but the idea is at least on small scales, what can I say? Why do you suppose Kaiser has difficulty scaling? Let's start there more concretely.
Why does Kaiser have, there's probably several reasons, but the first is they come in with an insurance product that doesn't partner with other health systems, right? So they have to immediately go to scale, and it's very expensive for them to go to scale. They don't stand up acute hospitals right away. So again, they have to partner with the local health systems, and the local health systems have seen what they've done in California and other locations, and they're not prone to help them. Right. It's like, I don't want to do a deal with Kaiser knowing full well what they're going to do is they're going to, you know, continue to chip away at my business. And then eventually they're going to plop down a very efficient and well-run hospital and really start to impact our market. It's interesting when Kaiser, when we were competing with Kaiser at St. Joe's, our quality scores and everything was way above Kaiser early on. And we sort of used to look down our nose at them in derision, like, ah, they can't deliver quality care. And then slowly but surely, their quality of care kept going up and up and up and up and up. And then it was better than ours. And part of that was they managed the quality of care in a way from one end to the other, and the variability of care from one end to the other much better than we did as a health system, because they were completely integrated. And we were not integrated. Why haven't they been able to scale? It's a tough model to go into a new market with the way they've designed it. There are probably other ways they could scale, but they haven't tried.
So I heard you mention one of the reasons why Kaiser experiences difficulty scaling is because there are huge capital expenses associated with doing so, acquiring, standing up acute hospitals, going to market immediately without partnerships. And you would think, well, the way to do that is a very capital intensive process. Is there capital? And then you're looking throughout healthcare. There are a ton of M&As. First of all, you had Haven, which was the endeavor between Amazon, Berkshire Hathaway, and Walmart.
JP Morgan, Berkshire, and Amazon.
Yeah. So that failed. So the question is, why did that fail? And then you also have M&As all over healthcare. You have Walgreens taking over Summit. You have Amazon taking over One Medical. So there are other players getting in. There is traditional finance getting into healthcare.
There's a battle for primary care right now.
And so why doesn't big money, why doesn't private equity, venture capital, traditional finance start investing in the integrated care delivery model that would support scaling up a Kaiser-like model?
Well, by the way, I mean, there's a ton of VC and private equity-backed roll-up strategies for primary care right now. I mean, that's where the battle's being run. One, because essentially, if you can get in between the consumer and the health system and you can direct care, that's a winning strategy. Optum's proved that. United Healthcare Optum has proved that. You're seeing CVS run after that. You're seeing Amazon run after that. Everyone sees that as sort of the, you know, get in between, start to direct care. Because one of the things that's going to happen is it used to be all healthcare is local. You know, that was the big phrase, all healthcare is local. I remember hearing that when I first came into healthcare. And it made sense because we had 30% market share. They couldn't go anywhere else. They came to us. Well, now you have deals like for employers doing deals where they contract with Mayo and they contract with City of Hope and they contract with, you know, and so on certain diagnoses, they actually put their employees, these can be minimum wage employees. They're putting them on a plane and sending them to California, or they're sending them to Rochester and other places. So they're fundamentally changing that game. I before we go too far off of this, I'm not a fan of socialized medicine either. I just want to be real clear. I think the answer is in the free market system. I think it's transparent. I think it's data, right? I think it's transparency. I think it's data, and I think it's choice. I live in an area that's loaded with Canadians, and they come down here and they have procedures done. And I'm like, why are you having procedures done? I mean,
in Florida, for our listeners who don't know where you live.
Yeah, in Florida. And like 10% of the people who live in my, actually 15% of the people who live in my community are from Florida. And I'm like, why don't you get your health care in Canada? And they're like, well, because I have to wait for 9 months. I'm like, wait for 9 months? That's like, we wouldn't even understand that in the United States. And so if you go to that kind of model, you end up with rationing of health care because you can't possibly pay for and have, you know, the kind of investments that you have in the United States. And so I don't think it's a complete swing to socialized medicine. And that's what it is. It's socialized medicine. Well,
hold on. Just to define terms here. The four examples of integrated delivery models, is that, are those examples of socialized medicine?
No, I'm talking about single payer. I'm talking about government run, single payer, Medicare for all that kind of stuff.
All right. But okay. So back to the original question, why isn't traditional big finance and large retailers investing in the proven integrated care delivery models?
Oh, why aren't they investing in that? It's a bad business model. Healthcare makes money. Hospitals make money from essentially only three or four lines of business. And, it's tests and imaging, it's oncology, and it's surgery, right? Primarily, cardiac surgery and other specialties, but it's primarily surgery. So they make money there and they lose money everywhere else. Nobody looks at that business model and says, boy, can't wait. Capital intensive. Nobody looks at that business model and says, I got to run into it. Now, the real question here is, how do we transition? Because there is a transition and we're seeing it. Intermountain is doing it extremely well. And they're doing it on multiple fronts. First of all, they have the health plan, which is now up to, you know, over a million covered lives. And so that health plan, which they launched, I don't know how many years ago, but it's at least 5 years ago they launched it. And it's been wildly successful. And they're going to scale that. And they're going to grow through acquisition and other things, but they're going to scale that model. But they're also doing a lot of great work in the social determinants area. And all that, and they're partnering with the United Way, they're partnering with local communities because they understand that if you cover these lives, you have to engage the local community, the United Way, the quite frankly, the religious institutions, the people who are there, the social institutions, people who are there on a day-to-day basis. If 80% of health is outside of healthcare, you have to partner, and they're doing that extremely well, and they're going to scale it. The question is, how many others are going to be able to scale it, and what is that going to look like? And I think you're going to see specialties, specialists like the academic medical centers primarily, who are going to live on brand, and they are going to be the highest end acute care delivery that you can find, and they're going to thrive. Because they do research, they're advanced, and that's where you want to go if you have cancer and other things. That's going to happen. The IDNs are going to get squeezed from both ends. They're going to get squeezed on the primary care side and people starting to move around and do things. And they're going to have to really reduce their cost structure, or they're going to have to figure out how to get into the payer game and to start taking on risk and manage care lives like Intermountain has done, or they're going to be acquired. Or they're just going to run out of money and really have to scale back. And we're seeing all of this happen right now.
How do you see payers responding to the Intermountains, to the Corewells of the country, creating their own payer models? How are the Blues plans responding to hospitals setting up their own insurance groups?
It's co-opetition, right? So they can, United has to partner with Intermountain because they have, 40%, 30% market share in most of the markets that they serve. So they can't just say they're a competitor unless they figure out a way to deliver care outside of them. So they have to partner with them, just like Intermountain has to partner with United because So you're going to have this sort of coming together of models, which is going to continue to happen. And the other thing on the data side is we used to sit across from the payers, and they had so much more better data than we did on our patients. Like, they knew things that we didn't know. And I think in these more sophisticated health systems, that data and that playing field is starting to get leveled. So the conversations are starting to get they're just on even terms. And so that's changing the game.
There, in pop culture in the United States, there's a story that's gone around where We've heard about how a father somewhere in the United States found out that his teenage daughter was pregnant because Target started sending diaper ads or something to the house based on their big predictive data models. As you see provider organizations starting their own payers or potentially sharing more data and ingesting more data from payers, do you see how do you see the care of patients evolving with greater access to predictive analytics and based on large data sets?
I'm trying to figure out the analogy you gave me with the question.
Yeah, well, it's like, okay, so if you have more data from payers, will healthcare be able to find more insights about patients that will lead to better outcomes as Target was able to come up with an insight about that teenage daughter that she didn't even know herself?
Yeah. I think what's going to the claims data is the claims data, and it tells you more about that 20%, the healthcare line of business. I think what health systems are getting more attuned to is they need to be better at the things that consumer companies are good at, which is figuring out what your preferences are, figuring out what your decisions are as an individual. And so they look at the community and say, we have 1.5 million patients in our community, but there's 3 million patients, potential patients in our community. We need to know all 3 million. And those people, we need to start growing out of that 20% of just healthcare data into, you know, what are their preferences? Do they exercise? How do they make decisions? Psychographic data, you know, how do they make decisions? Because we want them to be well, and how do we keep them out of line at, you know, Burger King and McDonald's? No offense to either of those, because I love them, but but they, you know, going there repeatedly does not make you healthy. And the health system needs to establish itself as the partner for health in the community. Otherwise, someone else will.
We're approaching the end of this podcast episode, Bill. So I'd like to give you the opportunity to speak to our community of CIOs, health IT leaders in large health systems across the United States about risk and how we see risk sharing and basically what's the next step in this conversation? What are we going to see in the next year or two?
What are we going to see in the next year or two? Well, actually, you gave me two different prompts. I'm going to take the prompt I want, which is, okay, what would I say to CIOs right now? And I would say, first of all, know your consumer, as many of them as you possibly can, as many data points as you possibly can, bring it together in insights. And then the other thing I would say is embrace 21st century cures and all it represents. And what it represents is patient empowerment with data, patient-centric interoperability, patient empowerment with data, giving the patient data, and then becoming that guide. We all know, and I know, if you give me my patient data, I don't know what to do with it. But once you give it to me, I'm going to be looking for a guide. And I want the health system where I have my trusted providers and they're the trusted brand in the marketplace to come alongside me and provide a service that says, hey, we gave you all this information. We want to help you to collect even more information from your Apple Watch and all this other stuff. And outside of delivering your medical care, we're going to become your guide, almost a concierge type service that is totally digitally driven, data driven, and and gives me access 7x24 to somebody to talk to. I think that's the future. I think that's a strong path for health systems to take, to establish that that consumer-centric, patient-centric, community-centric approach to care.
Well, thank you. This has been Bill Russell, founder of This Week Health. If you haven't listened, you can go take a listen. I think it's thisweekhealth.com. Bill is also president of Health Lyrics and former CIO at St. Joseph Health. Bill, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Really appreciate the time.
From InterSystems, this has been the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. Thank you for listening.